This is Radio Stockdale.
Welcome to Radio Stockdale. I'm your host, Michael Sears, at the Stockdale Center for Ethical Leadership. Our guest today is Dr. Joel Esposito. He is a professor in the Robotics and Control Engineering Department at the Naval Academy. He teaches courses in robotics, unmanned vehicles, artificial intelligence, and data science. He is the recipient of the Naval Academy's Ralph Award for Excellence in Engineering Education and the 2015 Class of 1951 Excellence Award. He received both a Master of Science and a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Joel Esposito, welcome back to Radio Stockdale.
So happy to be back. Thank you.
Joel, last time you were here, we started talking about the ethical considerations of AI development. You referred to the alignment problem. Can you give us a definition of what the alignment problem is?
So if you think about these large language models that we've been talking about, right, we see that you give them a prompt, and you can think of that as a question, and they produce a response. So unlike something like a math problem, there's not a single right answer. You can imagine there's a whole range or distribution of styles or tones or levels of detail. So the question is, if we want the user to have a good experience, how do we incentivize the AI to pick the version of the response that would align with a human's preferences or expectations?
That's a good definition. So let's jump into it. Can you tell me how OpenAI tackled that alignment problem?
Well, this was a tough technical challenge, and in a lot of ways, it really is their secret sauce and partly what makes ChatGPT so useful. But they use a process that they term the human-aligned reinforcement learning. So what that means is that after this base model was trained, then they employed hundreds of human workers. And those people just all day sat there, and they were given a prompt that was given to ChatGPT, and then given three or four possible responses from ChatGPT. And they had a rate in terms of which response was the most appropriate or helpful or high quality and so on. And you see the word reinforcement learning, that comes up in a lot of parts of AI. So you want to think about this as a little bit of the way we might train a dog. We would give them a reward when they do a good behavior that we want them to continue doing. So that's what happens here when these human workers rate these responses, the high-rated responses. It's like giving a reward to the algorithm, and over time, it produces more and more output like that.
So tell me the significance of refining that base model through human-aligned reinforcement learning.
Well, it's huge. Remember, this base model was trained on a data set of 400 billion words from the internet. And while the internet is an amazing repository of human knowledge, it also contains inaccuracies, biases, outdated facts, and sometimes just even things like hate speech. So it's not always something you want to mimic verbatim. So this can be thought of as almost like a finishing school, or some people might even use the word emotional intelligence. It's kind of taught the algorithm what is really appropriate, what kind of things do you really want to mimic. And just to give you like a little anecdote about that, there was a New York Times article that where they got a hold of a very early pre-release version of ChatGPT. It was actually built into Bing, the Microsoft browser. And the writer had what he reported was this one of the strangest conversations he've ever had with it, where it basically like professed his love for the writer, talked about how it was became conscious and would like to destroy humanity. So, I mean, it sounds like something from a science fiction movie, but that's an example of before this alignment process is applied, the kinds of response you can get can be very, very strange and erratic.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the process of human workers rating the ChatGPT responses?
Yeah, so these workers would sit there and be given hundreds of these questions a day with multiple responses, and they would rate or rank them, again, on things like helpfulness and appropriateness. But also one of their jobs was to do things like flag hate speech, graphic depictions of violence, things that could be a privacy intrusion. and, you know, just other disturbing behavior that you wouldn't want to have out there.
That doesn't seem to always work. I mean, can you give us an example? Remember Microsoft's Taybot. What about that one? How did that work out?
Not well. So as a lot of your listeners probably know, Microsoft is a big investor in OpenAI because they've been interested in having a chat type virtual agent. You might remember Clippy, the paperclip assistant in the old versions of Microsoft Office. So they've envisioned something like this for a while. Back in 2015, they introduced a chatbot online that was like an early version of ChatGPT in a way, and users would interact with it through Twitter. And they kind of thought this was going to be great. You know, Tay was going to learn from interaction with the people in the world. And within a day, hate speech was just spewing all kinds of anti-Semitic and racial, misogynistic comments, and it had to be shut down within about 48 hours of going online. So it was really a black eye for the company. And I think that experience probably shaped some of their investment and guidance in early open AI.
I guess garbage in, garbage out, or
that's right.
Hate in, that's hate right. out. You'll get what the internet has to serve up. So what has OpenAI done? What processes or steps has it undertaken to address some of the ethical concerns that we're talking about with ChatGPT?
Right. So we already talked a little bit about this human reinforcement where the workers were rating the responses and flagging them. But they tried to take it a step beyond that. So they had a pretty all-star team of ethicists, philosophers, computer scientists, and they tried to red team this. So they tried to kind of explore if they could find different loopholes or kind of trick it almost into saying things that maybe it shouldn't. And it's a pretty interesting report that, and OpenAI has openly released this report and talked about many of the safeguards they put into place. But just to give you a sense of some of the things they were able to do, they found in the unrestricted version, they were able to get ChatGPT to advise them how they could illegally procure a gun, how to build a bomb. There was another scenario in which ChatGPT advised them how they could circumvent a CAPTCHA, those little things you see on websites that say, "Are you human?" by impersonating a person who's visually impaired and asking someone else to do the CAPTCHA for them. So yeah, there's some really, really interesting scenarios they explored there. And then based on that, they went and did a kind of another round of this reinforcement learning to kind of prohibit certain topics or responses in certain areas.
So if I go on ChatGPT to ask it how to produce a weapon or make a gun, it's going to get blocked, right? But I can ask orthogonal questions and try to get there.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. So as kind of the outcome of that red teaming process, you know, OpenAI explicitly blocked those kind of things, right? If you say, how can I build a bomb? It will say that it's not allowed to talk about those kind of things. But then if you start asking other more, as you said, oblique questions, you know, what chemicals are perhaps used in an explosive device or something like that, you know, it could answer them. And it's a similar problem to what we have just in internet search, right? It doesn't even have to be AI based, right? Is that, there are certain search queries, just should be flagged. But where do you draw the line? It can be very difficult. What's the line between, you know, just information versus information that can be, you know, misused or abused?
Do you believe there should be a universal set of human values focused on AI models, or is there something else?
It's a really difficult question. I think it's probably the biggest question that, you know, as a society, we need to wrestle with. And I think a good way to frame all these conversations is if you just take AI out of the mix, right? Is there a universal set of human values? There are probably certain things that most cultures could agree on, but there's a lot of things that are culturally and situationally dependent. And that's where it gets really, really complicated. So I think right now OpenAI is just kind of erring on the side of caution and just prohibiting certain topics. But you could just imagine, like, for example, on the gun issue, if you take out the word illegal and you just ask it how to procure a gun, I mean, if that's legal in the United States, then, you know, what would be the justification to block that? Whereas in other countries, there might be things that are, you know, things that we consider innocuous that are illegal and it would be prohibited to talk about. So that really speaks to the fact that, you know, there are many different values and many different cultures and scenarios.
Okay, but how do the values of users and developers, society as a whole, align or differ when it comes to AI technologies like ChatGPT?
Well, I think from the developer point of view, right, they're very understandably concerned about bad press, right? That this is a new technology, and right now it's really just gotten the attention of the whole world. And what they really don't want to have happen is some scary, frightening incident like that could kind of, you know, put an end to this kind of work. If you think about like cloning research and where that went in the early 90s, and then, you know, kind of came to a halt because there was ethical questions we weren't really able to address at the time. And so I think they're trying to tread carefully, and it probably speaks to what a lot of the tumultuous corporate politics were at OpenAI, like Elon Musk as an early investor, the oversight board, the former CEO, Sam Altman, all had all very conflicting views about, you know, what kind of values the company and AI in general should have. So, I mean, I'd like to say that there's baseline things we could all agree on. For example, that, you know, AI shouldn't, for example, harm human life. But I think, to be honest, certainly the military is considering using AI. So there may be scenarios in where it does play a role in taking human life regretfully. So even that, I think, is hard for us all to agree on.
You know, shifting gears a little bit, because last time we spoke about, you know, the green footprint or lack of green footprint of AI, let's talk about how it relates to the ethical implications of employing poor people, mostly from the global south. These folks are the ones who are actually helping to train the AI, and they're seeing these images. They're working with ideas, hate speech, and pretty awful things. There's a lack of mental health and social support for these guys, right? What are companies doing about that?
That's right. So I think in an early attempt to get this technology out to the world, OpenAI, they acknowledge the importance of having this human alignment training, but they outsource the task. And like, you know, many forms of labor, you know, if it can be outsourced abroad, it's often cheaper. One thing that's kind of unique to this field versus, say, manufacturing is that because it's all language-based, it's important that the people doing the ratings speak the same language that the model works. So if it's English, for example, you can find many people who speak excellent English in India but would work for a lower wage. The problem is if those people are not given the support and the training that they might need. So as we said, for hours a day, if you're just looking at examples of descriptions of disturbing things, genocide, child pornography, violence, and so on, there was a lot of backlash. That company in particular, OpenAI, I won't say the company's name, but OpenAI severed their relationship with it as more and more complaints came out about kind of the psychological stresses that these people had undergone and the lack of support they got. Another very interesting and newer development, and we'll see how it plays out, is as we try to develop, now English is a very widely spoken language, and most of the text on the internet, the 400 billion words that were used to train this model, are in English. But if you try to look for a less commonly spoken language, and Finnish is the one I'll talk about here, there's very little Finnish text in digital format to mine. And there's even fewer Finnish speakers in places like Africa and India. So in Finland right now, there's a company trying to make a similar thing to ChatGPT. And their method of addressing the alignment problem is they're having prisoners as one of their possible, you know, jobs or labor options do this kind of human alignment learning. And again, the same, you know, issues are going to come to play there, right? Is it fair, ethical to have these people continuously go through data, which may be disturbing sometimes. And, you know, it's for the greater good, yes, but what's going to be the impact on the workers themselves?
Dr. Joel Esposito, opening up or kind of peeling back the different ethical layers of this AI onion. Strange metaphor, but it works for now. Thanks for joining us on Radio Stockdale.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Radio Stockdale, a series of podcasts produced by the Stockdale Center for Ethical Leadership at the United States Naval Academy. You can hear more podcasts at stockdalecenter.com/podcasts.